Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, with a special conversation today because the voice you'll hear momentarily is Rebecca Volpe, who is assistant professor and vice chair for education in the Department of Humanities at Penn State College of Medicine. And I think this is the very first time that I've ever recorded an interview with somebody who is officially on the first day of their maternity leave. So you really are going above and beyond, Rebecca, and making the time to chat, even though you're presumably quite busy with other things.
Well, just to be clear, the baby hasn't actually been born. Right. I think if the baby had been born, we probably wouldn't be talking.
Right. Fair enough, although I think this is an important priority, so I might have had to put some pressure on you anyway.
That's true, absolutely.
Obviously kidding, but I do want to try to squeeze this in before you get even busier in the coming days, because as you know, you have a paper coming out in the February issue of Medical Education that's entitled, "Is the Research on Identity Formation Biased? Early Insights from a Scoping Review." And it's such an important and omnipresent topic, it seems, nowadays, how we're thinking about professional identity formation and how our educational practices are helping or hindering or ignorant of different aspects of it. And I wanted to see if we could have a bit of a conversation about your efforts and your findings.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited to be chatting with you about it.
Let me start maybe just with your own personal background. You're in the Department of Humanities, which isn't always the first place that we assume health professional education researchers are coming from. What is it about professional identity formation that was appealing to someone from your training?
Yeah, it got started actually from sort of a selfish space. I would go to work every day in the Department of Humanities, where a lot of my time is spent on educational endeavors. We have a lot of humanities curriculum in the College of Medicine, and I help lead some of that curriculum and oversee other pieces of it. So I would spend big chunks of each day thinking about humanities curriculum for these medical students. And I started to wonder, you know, we invest so much time, effort, and energy putting this curriculum together and putting it on, and we put, you know, our blood, sweat, and tears into it. But do we really know that we change our learners in any lasting, concrete way? You know, are we making them more empathetic? Are we making them more ethical? Are we making them more patient-centered? And I felt like the truth is that we really don't know. And I don't think that's a deficit at Penn State College of Medicine. I think that's a deficit in the field. I think the field doesn't really know what the outcomes of medical humanities curriculum are. So we designed a qualitative study just to try to understand what learning is happening in humanities small groups. What do the students talk about? What might they be learning? What might those outcomes be? And we felt like the main outcome of that study, that qualitative study, was professional identity formation. That the students were thinking about what kind of clinician they wanted to be. They were imagining hypothetical struggles that they would encounter and how they would handle the challenges that were placed before them. Yeah, so we just really felt that the primary outcome, what we felt like students were doing in those humanities small groups, was early stage professional identity formation. And so that's how my interest in professional identity formation was piqued, selfishly.
As most of our own professional research interests are, I suspect, in one way or another. So how were you defining professional identity formation then in that particular context with those observations that you were making? Is there something that stood out to you as being central to that concept?
That's a good question. I don't know that there's a quick and dirty answer to what is professional identity formation. I think it's a career-long process that involves the individual sort of reconciling and aligning their own values with the profession. See, what we saw in those study of humanities small groups was that the students were often sort of placed in hypothetical situations that was challenging to their individual values. So imagine a scenario where someone has bombed an airplane and it's your responsibility to take care of the bomber. Sort of ridiculous, right? We can think of less ridiculous examples perhaps, but that was an actual example that came up in the study. Imagine it's your responsibility to take care of this individual who's bombed the airplane. You know, how do you do that? How do you set aside your personal feelings that you might have about this patient and provide them with the best care that you know that your profession requires you to provide? So the question is, what is professional identity formation and how did we encounter it in that study? I think we encountered it when we saw students struggling with reconciling their own personal views and values and preferences with what they thought that the profession would expect of them.
Thanks very much. That's helpful, because part of the reason I was asking even for the definitional information is when you embarked upon this scoping review, I imagine there's a wide heterogeneity of things you encountered that all talk about the notion of professional identity. And so I wanted to ask if you would elaborate for us a little bit. What question was guiding your search through the literature and how you decided to constrain what resources might be relevant to try to synthesize in the way that you did?
I think that we weren't trying to prioritize or privilege any particular conceptualization of professional identity formation. What we were trying to do was hone in on the idea of professional identity formation and separate it from similar related constructs like professionalism and like socialization, which was actually one of the hardest sort of early parts of the study, was figuring out what are the concrete objective criteria that we can use when we're evaluating an abstract or a study to say, no, you know, this is about socialization. This article here is about socialization, and so therefore we're going to exclude it. And this article here is about professional identity formation, and so therefore we're going to include it. But if it meet the criteria for professional identity formation, which we operationalized as the process of integrating and aligning an individual's self-conceptions with the profession, that was the definition we used. So if an article was about professional identity formation, along that definition, we were including it. We weren't trying to narrowly look at a particular subcategory of professional identity formation or privilege a particular understanding of it, because the empirical professional identity formation field is so young that there are, I think, many competing definitions of professional identity formation, and I definitely don't claim to know which one is, you know, the right capital T, capital R one.
That is a perfect segue to what I was really leading to, which is circling all the way back to your title, or the question asked in your title of, is the research on identity formation biased? In psychology, where I trained, the word bias is a very neutral term, but in common language, it's often seen as something that is deliberate or leading somebody to be biased against something for sake of, you know, maintaining their own perspective or authority or something else. What was it that made you use that word bias, given the way you just described the literature and your own perspective on it?
So I think that we're talking maybe about two sort of different things. So I agree. I definitely don't think that there's any malintent from professional identity formation researchers. So it sounds like our usage of the word bias would cohere more with how you're used to using it in the psychology literature, that it's more of a neutral word. We're not trying to vilify anyone. But I think what we're trying to point out is that this research doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens in a context, in an environment, and in a culture. And if the whole idea of professional identity formation is that the individual trainee or, you know, practitioner needs to assimilate or sort of become a professional, then the culture, the environment that that individual is assimilating to has been created, perpetuated by the people who created and perpetuated medical culture. That's really a fairly specific subcategory of people, right? So historically, that was middle-class white males who were responsible for creating medical culture. And I would suggest probably that that culture continues to be perpetuated, because although our trainees are increasingly diverse, the people in power in medicine are less so. And so what I'm saying is that the culture that was created probably to a large extent persists. So we have these increasingly diverse medical students, and we're asking them to assimilate into a culture that was created by people who a lot of times are quite different from them. And so what does that process look like? And how can we support our medical students as they're trying to reconcile perhaps their competing values and preferences?
It strikes me as a critically important insight to have raised, and a really nice addition to the conversation about professional identity formation. As you think about those cultural influences and the diversity from which students are coming, have you any early suggestions or thoughts as to how we might, as a field or a community, better take into account those things that don't seem to be getting sufficient attention in the literature that you uncovered?
Maybe some really preliminary ideas. In my experience, being a consumer of empirical research and also doing some empirical research, I think that we often don't pay a huge amount of attention to demographic variables. They're not really very sexy or interesting. And they're not usually the point of the study. You know, there's something that you collect along the way. But I think that when we're thinking about professional identity formation, that sort of ignoring of demographic variables, not ignoring, we collect it, we just don't attend to it, right? That sort of minimization of demographic variables is probably a mistake. And the reason I think it's a mistake is because of what I was just saying about how the culture and the background of the individual is so fundamental to the process of professional identity formation. And assuming that it's not, that it's sort of irrelevant that every trainee is the same and has the same values and preferences and will assimilate in sort of the same way to the profession, I think does potentially a really big disservice to our diverse trainees. So it's sort of a truism, but if you're asking for guidance, I mean, I think the first thing is just, as we're doing empirical research, to attend to those boring demographic variables, you know, to collect them, not only collect them, but then, you know, as we're analyzing our results, as we're thinking about our results, to analyze the results in light of our demographic variables, rather than just sort of reporting them separately. You know, we can say, here's a quote by a female medical student, that's one thing, but maybe better to say, here's a quote by a female medical student, and maybe part of the reason she is saying what she's saying is because she's female, right? So sort of a deeper level of analysis when it comes to thinking about and including demographic variables.
Thanks. That's a great place to end as a bit of food for thought. Obviously, raises a great challenge for us as we try to continue to figure out how all these different backgrounds intersect with one another and intersect with the individual's experience in their own medical school environment and all the variety that entails. So likely goes without saying that this just adds further to the complexity with which we're trying to grapple, but I think in a very positive and important way.
Thank you. Yeah. My background's in philosophy, so muddying the waters is what I do.
Fantastic. Well, it's nice to have some additional clarity and muddiness from this paper. So we can't get into all the details, as always, but I will remind our listeners that they can get more of the details in the February 2019 issue of Medical Education. The paper we've been discussing is the Research on Identity Formation Bias, Early Insights from a Scoping Review. And the voice you've been hearing is Rebecca Volpe, who's the first author on this work from Penn State College of Medicine. I didn't hear anything in your voice, Rebecca, that suggested you had experienced your first contractions, but we will wish you well with your coming delivery.
Thank you. Yes, I think we made it through the interview with no excitement, which was just what I was hoping for.